As I flaked the mooring lines on the dock, I was plagued by unpleasant visions of going without lunch. The students seemed pleased with Mein Gott as they piled on board. They thought she had character. I'd give them points for good taste and tolerance, at least. They helped us load the food and drink. There seemed to be plenty of it, and Esther May was there to give us directions about which packages had to be kept level so they wouldn't spill, which would have to be heated, and so on.
"What's for lunch?"
one of the students asked, a grizzly, bear-shaped young man in a white T-shirt and outrageously loud shorts.
"Fried chicken,"
Ron and I said in unison. We weren't guessing. Fried chicken is the only dish that the Constant Din has ever been known to serve its clients. It might be the only thing besides Jack Iron that Esther May has ever cooked or served.
"Yummy,"
he said.
"I'm hungry already."
Ron tossed him a can of Coke.
"Drink the Coke, eat the can. The food is for lunch."
With everyone on board and briefed on the itinerary, of which they heartily approved, we cast off. Bessie revved up enthusiastically to her 1,000 RPM cruising speed, and we chugged out of scenic Toenail Bay at a majestic 4 knots. Outside of the bay, we found that the day was a bit more blustery than it had seemed inside the bay, or maybe the wind was just beginning to kick up. Ron, happily at the helm, took us along the coast, in and out of the small islands. The water was an incredible shade of turquoise, and in the sheltered areas, you could see the bottom. The students were hanging on the rails, enjoying every minute. We cut through a narrow channel, and our steady bow wave made a hissing sound. A sudden motion to starboard made everyone gasp. "What the hell was that?" someone shouted. A giant ray had jumped. He flew up into the air and then splashed down again just a few feet away. "Did you see that thing?"
"How big do you think it was?"
a girl in a bikini asked me. I shrugged, having been paying more attention to the ample dimensions of her chest than the wingspan of the ray.
"It's pretty hard to guess with a quick look like that."
"It was 15 feet across if it was an inch,"
the grizzly bear said. The girl looked at me.
"Why not?" I said. "It's as good a number as any."
"Damn, I missed it," someone else was saying.
I looked over to see one of the students standing dejectedly and holding his camera as if he had expected the ray to hang around. Well, those were the breaks of Caribbean cruising. I could tell him tales of people who went home with several rolls of film showing the water right where the porpoises had just been, or what the sky looked like right after a green flash. That's why I always thought it was better to just kick back and enjoy what you can see, and buy postcards if you need pictures. But then I've always been a lousy tourist. Can't abide souvenirs either. I went down into the engine room to get away from the students and to see how my girl Bessie was making out. Everything seemed to be pretty happy. She sounded good, making her steady thunka-thunka sound. She is a low-revving bus engine and doesn't even get very hot. Everything looked normal and I didn't smell anything funny. I put a hand on the water manifold and was happy to feel that she was running nice and cool. We had a couple of small oil leaks, just drips, that I made a mental note of, and one of the hose clamps on the cooling system needed tightening, so I rummaged around for a screwdriver and took care of that potential problem. Back on deck, I reported to Captain Ron.
"Just thought you might like a newsflash that all is good."
Standing at the wheel, Ron beamed.
"This is great," he said.
"What a life, Mr. Mate."
He looked incredibly happy, and I thought it was only fair that at least some of the paying passengers appeared to be having nearly as good a time as Ron. When we rounded the North Point, the sea began to get lumpy, and a lot of the enthusiasm went out of a few of the passengers real quick. Then, as we turned to the windward side of the island, we were blindsided by a sudden squall that drove everyone inside for the 10 minutes it took to pass. Ron kept her pointed away from land, getting lots of sea room, which is just a prudent thing to do. As nice as it is to have land nearby, when a stiff wind is blowing you toward shore, it can suddenly feel far too close. Then it was over. The sky cleared and turned slate gray. I didn't like the look of it, but weather isn't my forte. The island, now a gray lump on the horizon, looked formidable. Part of that was anticipation, of course. I knew that this side of the island lacked any good anchorages, none you can get into easily anyway. If you know every inch of the island like the fishermen do, you can squeeze in through the coral reefs and then it's real safe. But otherwise, you stay away from the rocky shore. And that's what Ron was doing. With the storm gone, some of the passengers began reappearing on deck. Some of them didn't look too good. I imagine that's partly because they'd been below and the storm had stirred up the oil in the bilges.